Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk, and maybe after all that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news, it doesn't have to be this way, thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all your reoccurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something's coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting your time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. Or download the app from the Apple app or Google Play stores.
Hello, everybody. We are back after a couple years, few years, like 7 years of not doing any Wisconsin Badgers podcast here at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Let's dip our toe back into that water. My name is J.R. Radcliffe. Perhaps you know me from the Milwaukee Brewers Microbrew podcast. Perhaps you know me from the Point Forward podcast with Jim Ozarski discussing the Milwaukee Bucks. What about the Wisconsin Badgers? We haven't talked about them in quite a while. But now, one of my new colleagues here at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, John Steppe, is joining me. And this is a great time to get into Badgers for some good reasons, but not all good. In fact, mostly not good. There is a lot going on in the football program, the basketball program. We're going to talk about the volleyball program. And Mark Stewart may be joining us here at some point as well, our other colleague at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. But John, welcome, by the way, to the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. For people who don't know you or haven't seen your work, I mean, you write like six things a day, so I can't imagine they haven't seen it. Tell us a little about yourself. Let's start there. Who are you, John Steppe?
Yeah, well, awesome to be here. I am a New Berlin native. This is probably a funny week for me to say that I then went to school someplace 75 miles west of Madison. But I'm a Marquette grad, interned at the Journal Sentinel. You were my first internship boss.
That's correct. That's wild, but true.
Yes. So very full circle here. So interned at the Journal Sentinel, interned at the Cedar Rapids Gazette. The Cedar Rapids Gazette hired me out of college, graduated in 2020, which is just about the worst possible time to be wanting to be a sports reporter when sports were pretty much not happening. So I did business reporting for a little over a year, then moved over to Hawkeye football there, covered four seasons of Hawkeye football, saw a lot of really good defense and special teams, and I'll probably leave it at that. Covered a pretty good basketball player named Caitlin Clark. And then the opportunity to truly come home came about. And it's been awesome to be back here, you know, in my home state. You know, I tell people that, like, when I tell people in Iowa that, you know, I'd say I'm from the Milwaukee area, and be like, oh, okay, cool. You know, maybe I saw a concert there or something like that. And here it's like, oh, New Berlin, did you go to Ike or West? So it's been great to be in Madison, great to be back in the home state, and great to be on a Journal Sentinel staff with a lot of colleagues that I've really looked up to for a long time, and excited to call you, you know, Mark Stewart, so many others, colleagues.
Shouts to the New Berlin Eisenhower Lions and to you, John Steppe. I really think you come in with... first of all, I think you're doing a great job. It's awesome. And if people have not followed you, they really should. At jsonline.com, you are writing constantly about all the Badgers programs. And I love the perspective that you have from Iowa. I'm going to want to talk about that a little bit, because I think Iowa and Wisconsin are pretty comparable programs, and one of them is still doing what they do, and one of them is in a huge, gigantic rut. And that is where the Wisconsin Badgers program is. So I'll ask you about that in just a second. First of all, before we get to that, we'll start with signing day, because that was the big thing that is on top of mind as it relates to football. We do need a name for this podcast. If we're going to keep going with this, we're going to need people to step up and give us some ideas here. So if anybody has anything, you can find me on Blue Sky on Twitter. You can reach out at J Radcliffe at, well, actually, I believe I believe our email addresses have changed, but the one I know that works is jradcliffe@gannett.com, G-A-N-N-E-T-T. That is not the branding that that we'll be going with going forward, but you can reach me that way. You got a name for me? Let me know, because I'd love to get that together and make this a regular thing. Mark Stewart, I believe, is joining us here. I can hear him. Mark Stewart, are you there?
Yes, I am. Just grabbing some headphones. So,
Very good. This is perfect. This is perfect. We are already. We're on the fly here, and with this new Wisconsin Badgers podcast, new old Wisconsin Badgers podcast. Signing day was yesterday. As we record this on Thursday, it was December 3rd, and it did not go well for the Badgers. I don't know if anyone thought it would go well for the Badgers. So, Mark, I'll start with John as you get set up, and then I'm going to ask you about it as well. The biggest name was Amari Latimer. He was a four-star running back out of Georgia, highly regarded player, the highest regarded player in this class, and he ends up not signing. He ends up committing to West Virginia instead. I think everybody thought that was going to be a little bit of a long shot to seal the deal there with where Wisconsin has been, but he had been committed for a long time and hadn't wavered until, of course, right at the bitter end. John, for me, it's not so much that he isn't committing to the Wisconsin Badgers. It doesn't surprise me. We're not talking about one of the top five running backs in the nation or anything. I think at this point, where we've seen college football go, I'm not sure we should even be too invested in these like recruiting classes. None of these guys stay, or you know, that's true for a lot of programs. But he's going to West Virginia. Like, West Virginia is a good program, but again, like, this is a program that I would put on par or below Wisconsin. And he's not the first guy. They just had a guy that was transferring in and then quickly transferred out to go somewhere else that wasn't that exciting. I guess I want your impressions of how signing day went. If this is a mechanism the Badgers can use to get back to where they were, because that's ultimately the biggest question. How do the Badgers rebuild to being a team that is good, to being a program that is what it was as of 5 years ago before Luke Fickell got here? What are your thoughts on signing day and with Amari Latimer? Did you have any hope that he was actually going to sign with Wisconsin?
I really don't really count on anything until you see that actually written, you know, where they sign the dotted line, they, you know, post the social media graphic to announce that they signed. You know, with today's day and age, and, you know, we saw some flipping that helped Wisconsin and some flipping that hurt Wisconsin in this last week. So it's really hard to count on anything until that's, you know, official. Obviously, you know, the press conference yesterday with Luke Fickell was before Latimer made his announcement. So, you know, Wisconsin couldn't really comment either way on that. But I would say in general with, you know, Latimer flipping, you know, you never want to lose a coveted recruit, especially somebody with as much talent as Latimer has. But if you're looking for the silver lining for it, they do have some pretty good young running backs right now. And you have talent in that room. So there's that. And really what's going to be important is what happens in the transfer portal cycle. You know, this, you know, it's intentionally a smaller recruiting class. And, you know, if you can, you know, quote unquote, win the portal cycle, that would really go a long ways toward maybe some immediate position needs that this Wisconsin team has going into Luke Fickell's fourth season. So yeah, overall, not a shock. Nothing really shocks me at this point. Not ideal, obviously, to lose somebody of Latimer's talent, but also, you know, I wouldn't necessarily hit the panic button either, you know, because the portal is really what's going to make a difference in kind of this immediate future for the Badgers.
Yeah, I think that's got to be true. You see, it's so hard not to point to examples like Indiana that just kind of did this overnight, or even former Wisconsin Badgers offensive lineman Jason Eck at New Mexico. Like, that's a smaller scale, but like, they went from perpetually bad, got 70 new players, and suddenly they are tied for first place in the Mountain West Conference. I'm not saying that's going to happen in the Big Ten. It obviously won't. But Mark, you've been here a long time, man. You've seen it all. You've seen recruiting classes come and go. You've seen coaches come and go. We will get to the biggest picture question, which is how in the world do the Badgers build themselves back? But where is your head at right now? You just saw this recruiting class regarded in the ranked in the 60s or the 70s after a few cycles in the 20s. What are you thinking? Are you kind of with John where it's like, can't really focus too much on the recruiting class? That's not really the pathway back, at least not in the short term.
Yeah. Well, first of all, how do I sound? Can you hear me okay?
You sound beautiful.
Okay. Because I can say you guys sound pretty smooth. And once I put these headphones on, it's like it's the next level of hearing both your voices there. No, seriously, that is a legitimate compliment. But as far as, these days, it is a combination of the high school recruiting and the transfer portal because, especially in the Big Ten, it's hard to win with young guys. You're going to need some veteran experience. And that comes through the transfer portal. But you're also going to need to have some guys that you kind of, work up the rank. So, this class, Wisconsin got a commitment from a safety this morning. So the class is up to 14 players now, which after we get off here, I'll see how that affects their national ranking. Maybe it'll bump them up a spot or two. It's a different era. You can't get too worked up about the recruiting aspect. What used to work might not work anymore, or we're finding that different programs are figuring out different ways to win. So, as far as, you guys were talking about Latimer and him flipping to West Virginia. I mean, that was a big loss. It looks like the kid can play, but Wisconsin did get a running back out of its class. Quantavious Fatboy Wiggins. I will have to, once we meet Quantavious, see if he actually approves of, us in interview situations calling him fat or fat boy. But a cool nickname.
I am on record as being in favor of anybody named Fat Boy. That works for me. That is brand specific to me. Thank you.
Yes.
That should boost his recruiting rating just for that nickname.
It should. Yeah.
Yes.
He's got,
yes.
It's a whole different, it's a whole nother star. That's a 3.5 star now, or at least on nickname alone.
Yes. So they do have a running back. And you do have to be kind of careful with, the money you spend on these guys, because you do have a young running back room. There has to be a pecking order. You can't have a new guy coming in who's never played. Makes sense to the guys who are still there, who are younger guys. So, so I get why they didn't go as far with him maybe as fans might have hoped. But yeah, I mean, like, this is just a weird era. To me, it's kind of an exciting year, because if your team is bad and you get a coach and a staff in there that figures something out, maybe in 2 years, your program is Indiana. College football is so, to me, it's kind of stale in a lot of ways. It's always the same 8 to 10 teams that are always in the national championship race. And, maybe in this new era, we'll start seeing more of some different faces in there.
There's so much on the bone with this, so much meat on the bone, because, you talk about, well, why would anybody commit to Wisconsin right now? Because A, they're not showing that they're on a trajectory toward winning a lot of football games. B, I think it's fair to classify Luke Fickell's tenure there as tenuous. Like, I think a lot of people wanted him gone this season, and he's going to be back next year. And it's hard to know if this team is unable to win a bunch of games next year, then the coaching staff might turn over. Then again, what does it matter if they do or don't? Most guys are not at programs for more than, an average of a year and a half. Like, I don't know across all disciplines if that might be too high. So I don't know if that impacts this aspect as well, including the transfer portal, if that impacts whether or not they can attract the talent that they used to attract. I'd be curious, Mark, first on the idea of Luke Fickell as a quote unquote lame duck coach, if that's going to stand in the way, because people are going to be like, well, how do I know you're going to be here for very long? I have no assurances. I have no way of knowing that. And that it extends down to the coaches underneath Fickell as well. What do you think of that? And I guess I'd be curious on your broader thoughts about the university's decision to bring him back, to kind of maybe look at the landscape of college coaching and say, look, we weren't going to get anybody in here that was going to change anything anyway. Let's just stay with what we've got. Or the idea that Luke Fickell himself can get better. Like, where is your head at with that?
Well, I mean, I guess going to your second question first, as far as Luke coming back, me and John had, talked about this at the time. I wasn't mad at the decision. Like, this this year has been, you guys tell me, I'm trying to get my head right in this, in my square here. So tell me how I'm doing.
You're looking good, man.
Yeah. You know, this year has been so, it's been a tough year, and obviously fans should expect more from this Wisconsin program. But, you know, a lot of things happened this year that are, I would say, unique. I mean, how many teams have had their fourth string quarterback essentially start three games? How many teams had the load of injuries that Wisconsin had at the same time as they're playing the toughest schedule they've ever played? I wasn't mad at it, you know, because I mean, I think that, you know, this was kind of a unique year. You know, the other thing is, when you fire somebody, who are you going to bring in? You know, there's a financial aspect of it where, you know, you're going to have to, you know, there would be the Luke Fickell buyout, and then whoever you bring in, presumably, is going to make at least the same amount or more than Luke Fickell's making. And then you get, you know, you got to figure out a situation where, you know, how you're going to invest in players and things of that sort. And, you know, does the coach work well with the athletic director? There are a lot of different factors. So I was, you know, I wasn't mad at the idea. You can't always blow it up. And I think, you know, wasn't maybe the year to blow it up. You know, but as far as like high school players and recruits, what do they say to those guys? I mean, I think in this era, hey, I can commit to Wisconsin this year. And if the coaching staff leaves, hey, I'm gone. And, mm-hmm. you know, maybe in moving to a different school, you know, that certain guys, they might even, it might even enhance their value. You know, what they did as a freshman at Wisconsin, they might all of a sudden get a better deal somewhere else. So I don't think, you know, that players look at it long-term like anymore, like, hey, I'm going to be here. Are you going to be here 5 years or 4 years from now when I'm done? Because they know, hey, maybe I don't want to be here after 3 years.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. Like, a couple of thoughts. Like, first of all, recruiting is already really difficult in 2025 with, you know, player compensation, all of those aspects of it. You know, how do you divvy up your portion, you know, the football portion of the $20.5 million that goes across all sports? You know, recruiting is already a tough business. It gets tougher when, you know, opposing teams are probably able to do a little more negative recruiting against Wisconsin, just, you know, especially on offense. You know, how do you recruit an offensive guy when you look at the trajectory of the offense? You know, regardless of whether that means, you know, Luke Fickell as coach or, you know, others, you know, the trajectory hasn't been great there. But at the same time, you know, the same negative recruiting that can be used against Wisconsin in terms of what is Luke Fickell's future beyond 2026 can also, you know, you can use that against a lot of coaches, because how many coaches do truly have a lot of job security? And, you know, how much are, you know, to use the previous, you know, Big Ten school I covered, you know, how many opposing coaches are using Kirk Ferentz's age against him? Now, Kirk Ferentz keeps on saying after every year, yep, I'm back next year. You know, the guy doesn't exactly have hobbies. He will be the first one to say. But you look at it, you know, he's not stamp collecting or bird watching. But, you know, that aside, you know, I think you can probably use that, you know, kind of quote-unquote negative recruiting against a lot of programs right now. And to Mark's point, you know, if you have a really good couple of years at a program, the portal opens a lot of doors for you to go someplace else if, you know, if whatever your coaching situation changes. So, you know, do I think that there would have been better success on the recruiting path if they didn't have such a dismal stretch this year? Yes. But I think that the dynamics of it also are a little different than, you know, so is it a factor? Yes, but it's not as much of a factor as it would have been maybe 5-10 years ago.
Yeah. John, I'm really glad, John, that you brought up your Iowa experience, because I do want to talk about this, because when they hired Luke Fickell, I'll go to the mat for how I felt at the time, which is, a perfect hire. You know, they had a guy in Paul Christ and he had been fired already, but you know, there wasn't, it didn't feel like to me that the program was sort of entering into this new phase of college football cleanly, you know, really, really emphasizing the transfer portal, prepared to work with the NIL system. It felt like they needed somebody who could be that guy, maybe that more of a face, and certainly somebody with a track record of success. And that was Luke Fickell. Perfect hire, in my opinion. It has not worked out. Now I look at Iowa. They play the same, we'll call it unglamorous brand of football. You know, like it's recruits' eyes aren't lighting up, ready to sling the ball around at Iowa. They kept their coach. It's, you would think, kind of a program that would be ripe for the picking, you know, that would be the type of program that falls behind in the new era. It hasn't really happened at Iowa. And I guess, you know, you're somebody who's seen it up close. Why not? Why is Iowa sort of immune from whatever has befallen Wisconsin? Is it purely maybe they hired the wrong guy? I mean, we've talked about why they should keep him, and that's totally fine. But I struggle myself. Like I can't tell you why Iowa has been able to stay where they are while Wisconsin has fallen so far behind.
I think it's a couple of things. You know, you look at Iowa, and I would say, yes, you have a lot of the same personnel there for a while, which has created stability, which is truly a strength for them recruiting, especially with how they've recruited Chicagoland. You know, they've done an exceptional job recruiting Chicagoland, which is an area that Wisconsin would like to, of course, be in, a place that a lot of other programs would like to be in. So stability, you know, is a really big element of that. But within that, they've also adapted where, you know, you watch 2024 Iowa. I'm going to use that as an example because obviously I was watching a lot less 2025. You know, but if you look at what they were doing in 2024, my last season covering them, versus what they're doing in 2004. Okay, a lot of the same defensive principles exist, but they have adapted. You know, Phil Parker has been on staff, you know, from the beginning for Kirk Ferentz, you know, in different roles, but, you know, defensive coordinator for quite a while. And, you know, the way that he's evolved with having like the cash kind of hybrid safety position that they have is a great example of how they've adapted to how college football has changed. The hire of Tim Lester after firing Brian Ferentz as offensive coordinator, you look at it, and if you watch that 2024 Iowa team, their play calling had a very strong resemblance to what the Packers are doing. And LaFleur and Lester, you know, go way back together. So I think Iowa has perfected having the continuity, having the stability, but also still adapting to the times. And I think, you know, obviously the execution hasn't been there with the offensive line and the quarterbacks for Wisconsin, but what Jeff Grimes has wanted to do, you know, what this would look like in an ideal world for Jeff Grimes, I think kind of follows a little more of that path, in terms of what kind of like what Lester has done at Iowa, in terms of evolving within a scheme that complements, you know, running strengths. But yeah, you know, to long answer, you know, short version of the long answer there is, you know, they benefit from the stability, but they're also still making changes. It's not like you're seeing the exact same thing. And when they weren't making changes, you know, toward the end there with Brian Ferentz, they were paying the price there too, offensively. So those are some pretty dismal 2022 and 2023 offenses.
Mark, you mentioned one thing that Wisconsin's had to deal with that other teams haven't, and that is this cosmic quarterback issue where now three straight years, the guy that they brought in to be quarterback got injured and was unable to play at least a good chunk of the season. In this case, the Badgers were extra cursed in 2025 for good measure because both of the two guys that they brought in got hurt. Danny O'Neill struggled before getting injured, seriously. So they were down, like you said, to their third string and Hunter Simmons, who kind of proved he wasn't the answer, even though he could throw it downfield, but it, you know, wasn't the best. And then Carter Smith, who cannot throw it downfield, at least not yet, not to this point in his career. And, you know, Carter Smith came in with some fanfare. He was kind of a highly regarded guy who'd been committed to Michigan and decommitted when they got Bryce Underwood. So he was a reasonably hot commodity that they brought in. But quarterback is something that they're still obviously going to have to look at. You know, Carter Smith, very much a work in progress, at least as throwing the football goes. And at the same time, if you bring in guys out of the portal, you know, do you lose a chance to develop Carter Smith? Will he want to go elsewhere? Will he be willing to stick it out as a backup after starting games for the Badgers this year? Will he happily take that red shirt and just like stick around maybe for even more than just another year? I don't know. Like, there's a lot of questions there, but it does seem they did get a quarterback in this recruiting class. A lot of the guys that they've brought in the last few years aren't here. They don't stay long. You know, this was a notoriously almost completely revamped quarterbacking room from last year, and there will probably be some dramatic changes again. Your thoughts on that position, what it means for the Badgers, a running football team, but still some, they need a quarterback, and kind of where they go from here.
Yeah, you know, I mean, even the teams in the Big Ten that weren't really good had a pretty good quarterback. I mean, it seemed like every week, every team has a pretty good quarterback. So you need a guy there. And Wisconsin, as you know, that they have not been able to, you know, keep the guy that they want in that position healthy. You know, like say, you know, Carter Smith's situation is going to be very interesting. Okay. Did he, you know, I wonder how he feels about how this year went. You know, I mean, he spent a lot of the year, you know, working on the scout team, maybe, you know, even as a highly touted recruit. You know, I wonder even up to the point he starts to play, you know, how he was feeling about his experience. And then you get into the game situation where, you know, he's kind of being pulled in 2-minute drill situations, hurry up, obvious passing situations. You know, so yeah, it is going to be interesting. Like, I think the key question is like, who would he be comfortable sitting behind? You know, at the press conference yesterday, Luke Fickell was asked if, you know, he had talked to Billy Edwards about possibly returning for next year, and all Fickell said was yes. You know, it would be interesting if Edwards, for instance, was able to get a medical red shirt and then come back next year. On the surface, I would think maybe that would be a guy that Carter Smith would be like, okay, I can wait behind him if there's a path to being a starter in 2027. But, you know, again, who knows how good Ryan Hopkins is? You know, Ryan Hopkins might be a stud in waiting too, and next year he'll be the hot name that everyone wants to play. And Carter Smith will be, you know, Carter Smith will be yesterday's news. But to me, like you have to have a quarterback who, you know, maybe he's not an All-American like Julian Sain or Mendoza at Indiana, but you have to have a quarterback in the Big Ten who, if he gets hot, he can beat anybody. And I think there are a lot of guys in the Big Ten who fit that category, and obviously Wisconsin isn't close to that at this point.
I want to hear from both you guys. We could start with John before we move off of football. This is, again, obviously, like, we could be talking for hours about just the football program and where they stand and what's gone wrong. And I think we've hit on some of the things that have gone wrong. But John, if you could summarize it, and a lot of this was from when you were on the outside looking in, what do you, when people say, like, what happened there? What happened at Wisconsin that took them from a perennial bowl contender to absolutely one of the bottom few teams in the Big Ten? I mean, you obviously cannot point to one thing, but is there an elevator pitch? Is there a way to say, look, this is what, some of this was out of their hands or some of this was, like, what went wrong at Wisconsin? Obviously, then the next question is what they can do to fix it. But we've talked about that. So what do you say to people?
I guess the shortest way that you could answer that is air raid. You know, the Phil Longo hire just didn't work. And when you make such a drastic change and it doesn't work, I think that put them a little bit behind, where, you know, to kind of use, you know, the Iowa analogy, I think of kind of this Wisconsin 2025 offensive line kind of the same way I thought of the 2022 Iowa line that really, you know, drew a lot of criticism, you know, was very young, you know, was kind of relying on maybe some bridge guys in too much of a role, and was still probably a couple years away from really being at that, you know, what you would expect for kind of one of those classic Big Ten teams. So I think, you know, the air raid, you know, that affects your personnel, who you're recruiting, who you're getting, I think that was probably the thing that, because not that the defense was perfect this year by any means, but I think that maybe set the clock back a couple of years. And, it's not, okay, yes, you make the change to Grimes, but you're still working with what you got to a large extent. So I would say that's probably the biggest thing that, from the outside until July and now on the inside since, the biggest thing that kind of has stood out to me.
What about you, Mark?
Yeah, I mean, I agree that the air raid was, 2 years of, you don't want to say a complete waste of 2 years, but essentially, I mean, what the growing pains that Wisconsin experienced this year with Jeff Grimes' offense are things they should have experienced 2 years ago in Luke Fickell's first season. Now, in retrospect, I mean, there was a lot of excitement about the air raid, and I get why you would want that kind to try that kind of offense. I mean, I think it was a home run. Like, either you're going to strike out or you're going to hit a home run with that offense here. But I think what the injuries proved is that, one, it was too quarterback dependent. I mean, in retrospect, I'm a little surprised that, Luke Fickell's explanation for why the air raid didn't work. I mean, I was thinking like, well, maybe, should you have known that before, as a former defensive coordinator, like, okay, this is kind of the weakness of the air raid. But I do think, it was one of those home run type of things where in this era, you do have to have a quarterback and okay, what kind of offense is going to attract quarterbacks. And, I think the thinking was, okay, the air raid is that kind of offense because it gives the quarterback a lot of responsibility and it gives the quarterback a lot of chance to shine. But yeah, and in retrospect, I think, that set the program back a couple of years. That would be my long version of the Cliff Notes version of, and again, I'm dating myself to John probably.
I know what Cliff Notes are.
Okay.
Notes were the bigger thing in my day. But,
okay.
Yeah, I know what Cliff Notes are.
Okay, because I do date myself with John, a lot. I'm like, hey, you know what that actually means? He's like, oh no, he just kind of rolls with the punches and acts like he knows what, laughs along or whatever. But yeah, I mean, it shows the importance of choosing the right people, even in that first, even if you got a 7-year contract, you got to pick the right people in those spots almost immediately because you will set your program back, a couple years. And I think that's kind of where what happened to Wisconsin, if you had to pinpoint one thing.
Easier schedule next year. Transfer portal, like John was talking about, will be the big thing in the coming days and weeks. So we'll talk about that as we keep this podcast going. We'll probably have some things to say on that front, but kind of fascinating to me watching a program sort of collapse around itself in real time. And maybe it is just as simple as hiring the wrong coordinator, and that, in an era where you cannot afford to take any steps back because everybody else will pounce. I'll be curious to see if Indiana can beat Ohio State in the Big Ten championship game. Indiana has become the template on which teams like Wisconsin kind of look to as, that might be something we could pull off. So we will see. I want to talk about basketball a little bit, men's basketball. The sort of opposite track there where they kept Greg Gard, a guy, there were a couple years there where you could have seen the program moving in a different direction. They stayed with their guy and he has adapted. He's got three guys in the starting lineup who came through the transfer portal. Wisconsin is still very much a contender. They just defeated Northwestern in the first Big Ten game of the year and did so handily. John, I want to start with you about this team. We won't spend a lot of time on them, but I just for people who are maybe just checking in now, myself included, perhaps. What do we need to know? What do we need to know about this basketball team? Nick Boyd and John Blackwell leading the way, but where does this team stand compared to what they had last year with John Tanjay, a team that made it to the second round of the NCAA tournament? And what might we be surprised to learn if we tuned into a Badger game for the first time?
Yeah, it's a team that I think we're still learning a lot about. It's December 4th and there's still some question marks. There's incredible potential. It's a team with 8 newcomers. It was going to be 9 before Elijah Gray's dismissal from the team. But, 8 newcomers out of 14 players. Really The only main contributors from last year who are back are John Blackwell, Nolan Winter, and Jack Janicki. But they went really heavy in the transfer portal, and they brought in some really talented guys. You know, Nick Boyd is a guy who has been at a few places before. You know, he's at Florida Atlantic, then he's at San Diego State, now he's at Wisconsin. He was part of that Florida Atlantic team that went to the Final Four a couple of years ago. So, and Dusty May was the coach there, who's now at Michigan. And, you know, Dusty May speaks very high praise of Nick Boyd. So they have a truly talented point guard with Nick Boyd. You have John Blackwell has taken another step, it appears. You know, Nolan Winter has put up, you know, a couple double-doubles already this year. So you have a lot of talent. It's kind of a question of how well does this group gel? And you saw in the first half against Northwestern just how good this team can be, where if they play like how they did in the first half in their Big Ten opener, man, I would really not want to be an opposing team. You know, they were averaging, I think it's 1.7 something points per possession, which is just astronomical. So you look at it and a lot of offensive potential. You just haven't seen the consistency where, you know, I was down in San Diego for the Rady Children's Invitational. And I thought those are two games that we're going to learn a lot about the Badgers. And we did, where, you know, Providence, that was, you know, that last 5 minutes of the first half, I would have said was the best 5 minutes of basketball this season until the Northwestern first half. So they showed a lot of really good things there. And then you just didn't see that consistency against TCU, which kind of out-muscled. I'm going to turn out-physical into a word, even though it really isn't. But, you know, they just got out-physical by a team that really shouldn't have done that to them. So we've seen some highs, we've seen some lows. The highs really give this Badgers team a lot of potential. And, you know, there are a whole bunch of scenarios that really wouldn't surprise me for this 2025-26 group.
John, we have, you know, John Tanji again last year was kind of the main guy. And Nick Boyd is kind of the highest profile transfer this year. I don't know if those guys compare at all. My favorite thing coming into the season about Nick Boyd is that he played in a Final Four game with Florida Atlantic against San Diego State, then transferred to play for San Diego State, is now at Wisconsin. Both teams in that game, he literally gave up the winning basket and then went to play for them. So a fun journey for him. But if somebody is like, well, is this just their John Tanji part two? What would you, I mean, you can't discount obviously John Blackwell coming back and Nolan Winter for that matter, very good returnees. But what would you say to that?
I would say that, you know, Nick Boyd is his own player with his own role. So, you know, it's not a perfect apples to apples comparison, but in terms of a transfer who has experience, who has the potential to take another step, you know, obviously it's a little different in terms of what Tanjay's journey was, you know, with his injury and everything. But, you know, he is, you know, that transfer that can really be a special player. And you see when things are going right for him. It's funny, in that Northwestern game, he was like the one guy who didn't really have a great first half and then had a much better second half while everyone else, not so much. But, you know, he really has a special gift, you know, with the sport of basketball, and, you know, consistency has been a little bit of an issue sometimes. But you look at the 36 point performance he had against Providence. That was just a really unique performance, and, you know, the way that he can contribute in a lot of different ways. He took the most pride out of that. You know, he scores 36, he sets the Rady Children's Invitational record for a single game, he sets his career high in scoring. The thing he's most proud of, though, in that game was no turnovers. So, you know, he, you know, different position than Tanjay, different skill set, but somebody who can really elevate the other players on the court. And, you know, he fits his role well too because of some of the other transfers. You look at Andrew Rohde, coming from Virginia, originally from Brookfield. You know, he is an exceptional passer. So, you know, what he can do in terms of passing the ball, what Austin Rapp has shown, ups and downs, but, you know, when he's on those ups, what he can do in terms of scoring inside and out, you know, is special. What Braden Carrington can do is kind of a spark. Somebody that I wrote about a little bit earlier in the season, you know, what he can do is a spark. You have, you know, Nick Boyd can be that special player, but he can be that special player if you also have some of these other transfers, making pretty big impacts, which in pretty much every case, we've at least seen moments that have, you know, shown that potential. And it's just a question of, okay, when you're getting into some tougher games, you know, can they kind of put all of these pieces together?
Mark, I want to ask briefly about the women's team too. And unfortunately, we don't talk a lot about the women's basketball team in Wisconsin because they haven't had any success. They've made one NCAA tournament since 2002. They got a new coach this year. So, you know, we've been here before with new coaches during this stretch. So I don't know if that means it's necessarily a new era, but obviously they're going to give that a shot. What should again, people probably haven't checked in with them yet this year. What should they know about that team? And is there a chance this team, you know, at least it puts the building blocks in place to grow and get a little bit better than they've been?
Yeah, I would say, you know, are they putting the building blocks in place? So far, so good. I mean, when I look at this year's team versus last year's team, for instance, you know, obviously Wisconsin doesn't have a great player like Sarah Williams, who transferred from Wisconsin and now is starting at number one UConn. Uh-huh. But I do think, like, through their roster, they have better players. I think they're deeper. They have a lot more, you know, a lot of different options. You know, their two best players this year are transfers. You know, one Destiny Howell, a player from Howard, Kira Daniels, who played at Missouri State. I mean, I like a lot of the stuff I'm seeing so far. I mean, I know when Robin Pinkston was hired, there was for those who were paying attention, there was a kind of a lack of excitement. You know, it was kind of, you know, there was that initial buzz that you got when you hire a former UConn assistant like Marissa Mosley was, or, you know, the coach before that was had Notre Dame ties. You know, there was nothing exciting like that with Robin's hire. But I mean, the thing I like about her is that at least she's rebuilt programs before. You know, maybe she wasn't the hot name, but I think maybe she's what this program needs at this point to kind of, you know, stabilize it. They got three in-state recruits, which it's been a while since they got that. So I do like what they're doing. You know, Michigan State, they opened the Big Ten season with Michigan State on Sunday. It'll be interesting to see if, you know, how they play. They played well against Ole Miss, which is a top 15 team in the country. And then they kind of laid an egg against James Madison the day later. So, you know, which team will we see? It'll be interesting to see Sunday. But I do think for those who are interested, I think they're going to be a little better. And I think they're sort of on the right track.
Admittedly, on this podcast, we'll be spending a lot of time with men's basketball, with football. But I do want to check in. There are other teams. The hockey teams are very good at Wisconsin. Of course, the women's team is a program routinely competing for national championships. The men's team has had some good wins this year. So we will hit on that as these podcasts go forward. We'll talk about the women's basketball team again as well. See if you know, they indeed continue on a upward trajectory. And I want to give, you know, a little segment each time to everything else. You know, maybe there's a swimmer or a runner or a wrestler that we got to spend a little bit of time talking about. In this case, it's a program that will, you know, is still pretty top of mind if you follow Wisconsin Badgers athletics, and that is the volleyball team, the women's volleyball team heading into the NCAA tournament. They closed the year ranked 10th, I believe, in the last ABCA rankings. Still pretty good team. I mean, they only lost four games. I think, you know, they're a three seed in the tournament. They've probably fallen a little bit below the radar of a team that can win the championship. But like, the thing is, a lot of those losses came in the middle of the season when their setter, Charlie Fubringer, was not available. And she's pretty spectacular. Sophomore returning All-American who was hurt, a shoulder injury, I believe, midway through the season that really kept her on the sidelines and slowed down what Wisconsin could do. Now that they go into the tournament, they are at full strength and they've had some impressive wins at the end of the season to show for it, you know, including over teams like Minnesota and Purdue. John, I mean, I'm going to be honest. I want to know, is this a team that can get to the Final Four? Like, if I'm following this team, is that too big to shoot for? They won't be hosting when they get to the second weekend. This is a program that I don't even know. Was it 2017 or the last time they didn't even make it to an Elite Eight? It might have been a little more recent than that, but they are a regular in the upper tiers of this tournament. Give me your prognosis for this year's Wisconsin volleyball team. I don't know if anybody's going to beat Nebraska. Probably not. Probably nobody. But can Wisconsin at least get you know, put up a fight and get to a Final Four again.
You know, the good news for Wisconsin is they are, this is going to sound a little bit cliche, but they are really playing their best volleyball at the right time.
You look Yes. Everyone says that, but they do have everybody healthy, so that's nice.
Yes, and you look at what they've done in November, and I would say the exception has been when they played just okay against Northwestern on the day before Thanksgiving, was against Northwestern on the day before Thanksgiving, 2 days before a much more interesting match against Minnesota. So you take that aside, and the way that they, you know, I think they only, off the top of my head, I think they've only lost two sets in the entire month of November. You immediately saw when Charlie came back against Indiana, just the elevated level of offense. You know, Iowa is not necessarily a top tier or even middle tier Big Ten program right now, but, you know, just the offensive clinic that they put up. And obviously Mimi Collier is getting a lot of very well-deserved, you know, being a very special talent, a very strong candidate for postseason awards. But, you know, it helps too that Mimi now has Charlie set for her, and you're really seeing the combination of an All-American caliber setter with an All-American caliber outside hitter. And when you have those two things, you've got a lot of potential. You know, and I would say Mimi Collier has probably exceeded every expectation that I think you could realistically have for a transfer. You know, Wisconsin will say that they had very high expectations for Mimi, and, you know, she has performed every bit to that. I would say looking at this bracket, it's tough. You know, they should get out of this first weekend. You know, I don't envision that being any challenge. You look at what awaits them in Austin, and that's not an easy regional. You know, you're talking about Stanford. You know, that's a very good program. I think off the top of my head, they're number 5 in the last AVCA poll. So yeah, that's a very good 2 seed that you'd be going up against. Theoretically, you know, upsets can happen. And then Texas, you know, we saw at Kohl Center just how good Texas can be. And that was with Charlie Furbringer. So you can't say, oh, well, they were without Charlie. No, you had Charlie in that one, and Texas really took care of business there. I think Wisconsin is a much better team than that August 31st sweep by Texas. But, you know, so short answer here, there's a lot of talent. There's a lot of reason for optimism. A lot of things that you need for a team that could go to Kansas City, they have. The issue is it's a really tough path, and you're going to have to pull off a couple games where you're probably not going to be favored to go to Kansas City.
Mark, I'm not sure we still have you, but if we do, I'd like to close things down with you here. And we can even bring it back to football. I mean, I'd be curious if there's other storylines that have caught your eye, and it can be outside of football. But as we enter into transfer portal season, it's also notable that some Wisconsin guys are probably going to transfer out as well. I guess I'd be curious if there's one or two names you're really interested to know what happens with them. I personally, for me, it's like Eugene Hilton, Tretch Kekahuna. What are those guys going to do? What is still rattling around your brain as we get deeper into this offseason? Okay, so Mark is gone. I'm very sad to report, but John, I'll ask that question then to you. What transfers you're looking for, and separately, if there's anything else about Wisconsin athletics you want to touch on here?
Yeah, I think, you know, portal retention really becomes such a big thing this time of year. You look at it, and you have some young talent that did a lot. Obviously, Cooper Catalano, Mason Posa. You know, I think that if you're a Badger fan who is looking for a reason for encouragement, you know, that's probably the biggest reason. So, you know, a lot of optimism with them. You know, what Eugene Hilton, he's somebody that has excited me since fall camp in terms of what he can bring. And, you know, we saw moments of that too this season. So I would say, you know, especially, you know, on offense after a year where the production wasn't great, you know, being able to retain a lot of this young offensive talent that you have is really important. You know, I think I wrote in week 2 or week 3 about how important some of these redshirt freshmen are this year. And I think a lot of them have taken strides. those strides kind of become a moot point if you can't retain them. So this is going to be really interesting. I don't envy the UW football staff who has to figure out how to divvy up their, player compensation amount, through revenue sharing and through, third-party NIL opportunities. Keep in mind, this is not the collective environment that we are in, in past portal cycles. So I think it's going to be a really interesting, who do you retain and who can you get? This is, you don't have that runway to be, kind of going back to what we were saying earlier with it being a smaller class. You don't necessarily have the ability to wait 3 or 4 years for some high school development guys to develop with just the current state of the program. So, if Wisconsin is successful in 2026, I think the transfer portal will be a big part of it. And if they're not successful in 2026, the transfer portal will be a big part of it. But, certainly an interesting time in Badger sports, plenty more to talk about in the future, as basketball, continues and volleyball gets further into this postseason.
He is John Steppe. Read everything he has at jsonline.com. Same goes for Mark Stewart, who bid us adieu early, unfortunately, but both of these guys are going to be back. We're going to try to do this on a regular basis. We'll get to, discuss the volleyball team, but certainly the men's basketball team, but again, other Wisconsin sports as well. The football offseason will be surely very intriguing, very important offseason. John, thank you for joining me, man. We will talk again very soon.
Yes, always a pleasure.